Awesome. So this is how this final session will be broken down.
Okay, so as you can see from our program, we have representatives from 6 different organizations coming here to tell us about it. So let's invite our first from Dr. William Smith from UNESCO to start off this session. And as Khatija mentioned, we would like to ask you 2 questions. First, please share with us about your organization and your approach to building partnerships. In other words, what is your organization doing to promote quality education for all? And second, on a more personal note, how did you become passionate about what you are doing? And please keep in mind that each presenter has 10 minutes to share their thoughts. So I'll give the floor to you.
Welcome again to everyone. I'm glad you're here today. For those of you who I didn't introduce myself to yesterday, my name is William Smith. I'm the Senior Policy Analyst with the Global Education Monitoring Report at UNESCO. So I think my take today is going to be much different. At the Global Monitoring Report, we're looking at very big picture items. So I'll be giving you a global perspective on why we think partnership is important, and maybe not quite the practical approaches that other people will be talking about and how they create partnerships. So looking at the last 2 years of the monitoring report, so this year's report, which I presented yesterday on accountability in education, and the 2016 report, which was on education and its connection with the other SDGs. Really, when we think about partnership in those reports, we talk about breaking down silos. Okay, and so silos are really sectors, actors, individuals that are focused really within themselves or within their profession. This is incredibly important for the last report, as well as to some extent in this report. So we're going to talk about breaking down silos very briefly across actors in education, within the government, and across sectors. And then we've had an increasing push towards regional partnerships from the GEM report, and so we'll talk a little bit about that as well. Okay. And this is like quick stuff, one slide each. So breaking silos across actors. Yesterday I talked about for accountability to be successful, we really need to recognize that it's everybody's shared responsibility. With that, we need to understand that education is an interdependent enterprise. And so this is one of my favorite figures from the report, because it talks about a lot. So here we've got government being the biggest actor in education, right? But we have multiple actors or gears here. So we've got government, we've got teachers, we've got schools, and they are really connected, interdependent on each other, and need to work together towards this bigger goal on the agenda for sustainable development. And we know that there's a context in which everything needs to work, and the context will shape how it works. So that includes looking at the economic, political, and social context. But as I think I talked about a little bit yesterday, this emphasis on trust and trust-building motivation. And then regardless of what actors' responsibilities are and how hard they work and push for it, if they don't have kind of the 4 key enabling environments, or 4 keys in an enabling environment, nothing goes right. So, and that means that actors need to understand, so have the information on what they're accountable for, they need to have the resources to make sure they're able to fulfill those responsibilities, they need to have the capacity to fulfill those responsibilities, and they need to be motivated. And so this is our attempt to say, okay, when we look at something, we need to really take a systems approach. We need to be looking at breaking down silos. It's not just government, it's not just teachers, it's not just schools, it's not just parents. It's everybody's responsibility to work towards the larger goals in education. So we need to break silos across actors. This year's report also looks at breaking down silos within government. So oftentimes, we have the Ministry of Education, we have the Ministry of Finance, we have the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and sometimes they talk across each other, but oftentimes they're very focused on their own goals. And so we recognize that there's a need for communication and cooperation across ministries, and that there needs to be clear lines of responsibility so we know who's responsible for what. Finance ministries are incredibly important as they traditionally enforce internal financial control and compliance measures. And sometimes, for instance, in areas in Pakistan and Sierra Leone, we know that finance ministries have established auditing units within education ministries. However, one of the interesting efforts to have multi-stakeholder buy-in to education is through what's understood as joint sector reviews. So joint sector reviews are encouraged strongly by the Global Partnership for Education, so GPE, who funds them in developing countries. Joint sector reviews are trying to bring together a bunch of different stakeholders to review the annual education plan. So how have we progressed? How are we doing? So the idea is to have the Ministry of Education, the Ministry of Finance, the Ministry of the Ministry of Education, Finance, Civil Society, teacher unions, parents, associations, everybody at the table to talk about these things. So GPE just recently finished a review of 39 joint sector reviews. And the Minister of Finance, or a representative of the ministry, was only there in about half of them. Now this is really important considering you can have a great education plan, but you need to have the finances to back it. You need to be able to cost the plan out. How much does it cost? We have these ambitious goals, but if we don't have the funding, those ambitious goals are not going to come to fruition. And so the inclusion of education planning, finance ministries in education planning needs to be there so we have more realistic costing of education plans. So we need to be able to start breaking down silos and partnering within the government as well. Last year's report, looking at education and the other sustainable development goals, talked about breaking down silos across sectors. So, meaning that we can't just think about education as an education thing. We need to think about how education impacts health and how health impacts education. We need to think about how education impacts urban planning and how the way a city is developed impacts how people are educated. And so we need to be able to work across those sectors to break down silos, build cross-sector collaboration that contributes to this shared vision. One of the important examples we looked at last year was in Medellin, Colombia. So this is a figure from last year's report. And here we see that in Medellin, they have basically mapped out the city and tried to figure out how do we use education effectively in the city given the demographics and the breakdown of the city. Okay, so here we see basically a socioeconomic index where this is the darker are the wealthier pockets of the city, okay, and the lighter are the poorest pockets. And they've done some initial mapping, so this is urban planning and how urban planning could engage with education, and said, okay, we know that in lower income families, they have less access to books. They have less access to resources. They have less access to parents reading to them on a regular basis. So one thing that could be very useful for them is to have more access to literacy, basically. So they've started planning where they're putting their libraries based on some initial urban mapping. And so this happened in the mid-2000s, where we started really seeing this type of integrated urban planning. And over the last 10 to 15 years, we've also seen an associated decline in crime rates throughout the city. So that's breaking down silos across sectors, just one example. All right. So in addition to breaking down silos, we got a good question yesterday on how do we know stuff is comparable? How do we make comparisons across countries, especially with comparable data? And one thing that we've been emphasizing as a global monitoring report is that one of the more powerful partnerships is actually at the regional level. And there's lots of reasons to think that regional associations and regional partnerships can be really useful. So one is that they make their more appropriate reference group. It's more appropriate perhaps for Finland to reference Sweden than Finland to reference Venezuela. So we also know that regional partnerships are more likely to have voluntary exchange of information. Individuals in a regional partnership are more likely to come to consensus about a purpose, policy priorities, and mechanisms. Regional partnerships are also more likely to lead to deeper commitment and engagement and have results that lead to policy change in the country. Okay. So that's my push towards regional partnerships and breaking down silos. Very briefly, education for me. So education for me, I kind of think that I'm here in Finland, which is just amazing. I think education for me has been, it sounds probably incredibly cliche. So neither of my parents went to college. My dad dropped out of high school. And so I'm the first generation college person. And until I was 25, I had never been beyond the U.S. And the U.S., as much as there are parts of the U.S. that are pretty international, there are definitely parts that are very national. That was even before the last year and a half. So, and so thinking about the opportunities that education has come to just explore. I'm like, the freedom that that's given me, and I think how that's affected my career choice is that I know that even though I am a white male from the U.S., and even though, you know, I had a lot of privileges, social economic status wasn't one of them, but I had that part, there's still a lot of barriers. Like, there's the success I had coming from a single-parent bankrupt household, it's not the success all of my neighbors have growing up in a mobile home park. And so, and that's due to a lot of structural barriers in place. And so one thing that I want to do is to try to figure out, okay, well, what structural barriers are there in my country and other countries that are keeping people back from really understanding and taking advantage of the amazing opportunities education can provide. And so that's me. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for sharing your story and about UNESCO. Now we'll move to Satu from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to share us how the ministry is building partnerships.
Good afternoon. Good to be here. It wasn't that easy leaving Helsinki this morning. We have much more snow than you have. Yes. So, but I'm here and happy to be here. Maybe it's really hard. This was a really tough assignment because it's not possible to say almost anything in 10 minutes, but I just want to show you that maybe on this picture you will see maybe the most important partnership for Finland's development and cooperation. And the partnership is with those countries where Finland has bilateral development cooperation. In 6 out of these countries, Finland has cooperation in education. And what William just explained about the policy issues related to education and national level planning processes, that is the kind of the content of what of our collaboration. That's what we try to influence and which we try to improve with our partners in the 6 countries of this picture. The countries actually are Ethiopia, Mozambique, Afghanistan, Nepal, Myanmar, and one is missing. Palestine. Those are the countries where we operate and cooperate. Our collaboration and partnership there is not only with the partner government, but it's also with the partner donors. We'll try to as much as possible to harmonize our processes and in that way make it more effective for the government to kind of receive our assistance. Our assistance to those countries goes through what we would call the sectoral programs, where we either through another donor agency like the World Bank or directly support the budget of the partner government. Now, of course, each time that we have a new government, there will be certain changes in the way that the political leaders like to see our work. But I would say that at the moment, we are doing a little more thorough analysis of the way we work than maybe we've been doing during the so-called kind of regular changes of government. We would really like to do something that would help us to have a little more long-term perspective to our work. We've noticed that 4 years is not long enough time to actually really think through what our policies are and what our priorities are. And as part of that process, we also have been trying to develop the way we measure our results or the results of the cooperation that we have. This is just an example of one indicator that we've used to measure the work that we've been involved in. Of course, when I say our work means all the organizations and people and money and all the resources we have that are working with the assistance from the from our development funding. That is we in this context. And this is, for example, showing that how much progress there has been for the enrollment of girls on secondary education between these 2 years, like from 1999 to 2016. And you can see that there is a clear about 10 percentage points increase in the access of enrollment of girls in secondary education in the countries where Finland has been cooperating. So this is one of the kind of ways that we would like to understand better that if our work is resulting in something. And in terms of this type of numerative indicators, I think we can show certain results. Then we've also worked on some other indicators which are not all directly like results of Finland's bilateral cooperation, but are more kind of indirect results where Finland has been contributing among other agencies, like for example we contribute to the EU, we contribute to UNICEF, etc. And then through the work of those organizations we can say that we have in a way our share of the result. Here you also can see that in the higher education the last one, the 29 study programs in this HEI, what we call the HEI-IKI, is the Higher Education Cooperation Program for universities and institutions of higher education. And I think, for example, your collaboration with Eritrea may have benefited initially from this type of cooperation. 29 study programs have been designed in our partner country universities during the implementation phase of this program. But let me now just tell you about kind of what we are thinking, what we should be doing maybe more and how we could improve. We have realized very clearly that there is a certain discrepancy between the kind of the image of the world of the Finnish education and our own, let's say, the image of the Finnish development cooperation in education. And we would like to really see how we could strengthen the partnerships and how we could identify all the resources in Finland that should be working together with us in order to turn or translate the excellence and the capacities that we have in Finland for better use in development cooperation. We are in a very initial phase in this process, but we have, for example, noticed that unlike your study program, in most of the study programs in Finland, there is nothing, there's no content about, for example, the sustainable development or the sustainable development goals. The curricula doesn't include anything. We've been discussing this with the Students' Federation, and we would be trying to see if at least that we could correct this this kind of this situation. We've noticed that there is no career path from the university studies. Maybe again, unlike yours, there is no career path from universities to development work. Only in case your subject itself relates to it. But like teacher trainees in Finland are not particularly involved in let's say having their internships in developing countries, for example. We would really like to, through this collaboration and kind of expanding our partnerships, we would really like to kind of come up with a more clear story of what is Finland's contribution. In addition to these numbers, what is Finland's contribution to development in education? And also, we would like to really find some a common interest between these various organizations and agencies that work in Finland for education. We would really like to find a kind of a common interest that is something that it's not just about funding, but it would be something that would benefit the actual core business of each of these organizations. So maybe this is a kind of a little fuzzy idea at this point, but this is what we are working on at the moment and hope to be able to maybe also involve you in the discussions of, and maybe particularly you, because you are already involved in these issues, how then we could improve, how we could even have more Finnish contribution to improve the quality of education. We are really worried about the fact that we've been supporting Mozambique for the past 25 years in education, and about 5% of children who graduate from primary school can read. This is our challenge. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, and thanks for making the journey from Helsinki. You raised some very interesting questions. Next, we'll have Elizabeth Crawford from the University of North Carolina speaking and answering our two questions.
Hi, good afternoon. Do I need to use this? Maybe. So, my name is Elizabeth Crawford, and I'm from the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Thank you. And at UNCW, I teach courses in social studies methods, global education, and curriculum and instruction. Oh, I'm not used to such a hello.
You can use this one.
Okay, that'd be better. Testing. I don't see a button. Can't hear me? Oh, okay, good. I teach courses in social studies methods, curriculum, and instruction in global education to pre-service and in-service teachers at UNCW. And I think this is very timely because yesterday we learned from the GEM report that only 17% of teacher preparation programs are actually incorporating the SDGs into the curriculum. I'm proud to be one of those 17%, but that is such a low number. We need to do a better job of that as a global community. So part of my work in that area is through an organization called globalteachereducation.org. So you can go on that website. It's a U.S.-based organization, but anyone can join. And I'm part of the inaugural fellows group, so it just started. And we're working together as faculty at different universities to globalize teacher preparation programs in the U.S. and create resources that other global educators can use around the world to enhance the global dimension of the work that they do. So globaleducation.org is the site. So at UNCW, I use the SDGs as a framework for all my courses, no matter what I teach. I find ways to incorporate the content and the issues that we all face to address the SDGs. These are some examples of the curriculum units that my MAT students develop. They are global, they are concept-based, so what I have them do is analyze the academic standards, literally go through and underline the concepts that relate to the SDGs, cause and effect, water, interdependence, change, and then they find ways to incorporate the SDGs at a level that is appropriate for young children. So, for example, plastic pollution is a big issue in Wilmington on the coast, and it's a global issue, so they can find ways in primary school to teach children about what they can do to limit their waste, for example. Water is a really flexible topic or concept that children can address. We teach about life cycle, water cycle, and so forth, so water is essential to that. And then this year, the focus of the world's largest lesson is on food, which everyone can relate to, so they find ways to incorporate food system issues and solutions into the classroom as well. So my students actually, when they complete their units, they publish them on a website like Weebly or Wix, and they look professional, and then they email them out to teachers that they know. And I'm creating a database of all these units that other teachers can use. Because there are, because the SDGs are only 2 years old, it's a little bit limited in the resources at the elementary level that they can use. So why am I here? I'm really here because of Alina. I received a Global Scholars Grant through Chapel Hill 2 years ago, and I was literally sitting at my dining room table and picked a country that I wanted to learn more about. And I chose Finland because of what I had seen online about phenomenon-based learning. I think phenomenon-based learning is a great approach to teach the SDGs, where children can take action on real-world phenomenon. So I sent Alina an email, and she answered me with such kindness and openness, and she has become my mentor. So I came here 2 years ago, and Alina set up, all as busy as she is, all these different appointments at schools all throughout the region, and I was able to go through schools and see. I took a photograph of that poster in a classroom, and I was so inspired to see Finland addressing the SDGs in the classroom. I even brought my daughter here with me because global citizenship should start from birth, I feel like. And so Alina and I have continued working together. I hosted her in Wilmington. She came to North Carolina this summer for 9 days. That is her in my building in Wilmington at UNCW. We went to Washington, D.C. to present at the World Bank. She knows people who work there. So we presented a framework for global teacher education, which is sort of the beginning work, the work we hope to do together. And we have found ways to connect our shared research interests this way, even though we work with different students and different populations. And because of this contact, I was able to then meet new people who have made my work better. I met someone from ACEI, and she asked me to write an article on what we had presented. So an article on a curriculum unit that I wrote is coming out next month on SDG 12. So then more people will read that. So one email has multiplied into all these wonderful opportunities. And because of the Swedish faculty and students that I met here last year at the seminar, I reached out to them after I left, and I connected with a Swedish middle school teacher, Ali Haz, who's actually from Slovenia, and he and I continued emailing each other. I spent the day with him in Stockholm in May, and his students are now blogging with my students at UNCW, and we're studying food waste and sustainability. And I love this young boy. I want to meet him. But he, this is one of his posts on the blog a couple weeks ago. He says that, I like to understand how things work and why they do so. Therefore, I'm glad we'll be working out solutions to some of the world's problems together and maybe learn a bit about the current methods to tackle the problems in the process. So getting youth involved in problem solving, and they're modeling that to my students who will become teachers. So ironically, the world is such a small place. A couple years ago, I received an email about LIFTA. You need to check out LIFTA. Okay, great. So I wrote Paulina and had no idea that she knew all of you in Uvascula. So she answered me. We Skyped. Her partner, co-designer, Sardar, Skyped into my class. I'm having my students pilot the platform that you'll learn about in a minute in my pre-service class that I then hope to carry into elementary classrooms. And what I try to do is I model to my students the power of just reaching out to people. Send an email. Nothing can happen, you know, if they don't answer, no problem. But oftentimes people in global education do answer because they care so much about the work they do. So Sardar Skyped into my class. I tweeted about it. I make my students create a Twitter account for my class because I want them to know the power of reaching out to people. And there's so many great hashtags now for the global goals, like Teach SDGs, Global Goals, SDG, whatever the number. And so I go into the field, and when I see good teaching, I take photographs of it, I tweet it out, I put the hashtag for my class, LIC501, then all my students will see it, they can retweet it. When they go in the field, they can do the same thing. So this is a first grade lesson I watched the other day on SDG 2, on Zero Hunger. And first grade, and this is after all the hurricanes we've experienced and the devastation in Puerto Rico, she taught children about the impacts that weather has on food production. And then children connected it, 7 years old, to their own lives. And then they wrote about the time they were afraid when Wilmington had a hurricane. And so they're making those local to global connections through the SDGs. So it's really powerful, and it should start in kindergarten. So my students were very reluctant to create a Twitter account. They all moaned when I made them do that. But now I see them tweeting and liking and meeting other people. So shall I go on?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm
You're not in charge. So even though my students were reluctant to get on Twitter, I now watch them multiply their networks in global ed and tweet things about how to involve children, like the Global Read Aloud on the top left. Mim Fox is one of the authors chosen. So children around the world are reading Mim Fox right now and then sharing work with each other. It's really a beautiful thing. Peace Day was recently about a month ago. My students are tweeting about the Day of Peace. World Food Day was about 2 weeks ago. So they're raising awareness about world hunger or food waste. And then I like this quote. A lot of my students don't realize the issues we're studying happen locally. And Zero Hunger was our focus 2 weeks ago. And this student wrote, the LIC 501 readings are hitting me right in the feels. No one should go to bed hungry. We should not be killing our earth to eat. So it's pretty powerful what they can do to raise awareness with other people and realizing that these are issues we face in North Carolina as well. So the last thing I have is ideas for how to bring this to the world is really through reaching out to people, to strangers on the internet. There's so many platforms to do that. The Peace Crane Project was created recently where classrooms around the world are creating messages of peace. And you can go on their database and they have 100 countries listed and you just find a country, email a teacher. So I did that and I heard from teachers in India. College in India. They answered me. We made videos for each other. I have a box in my office of origami piece stuff I'm going to mail to Mexico when I get home. And this is how I want to close the session.
Hello? Great. We have the mics working. Hopefully we don't get the loud mic sound. Thank you so much for helping. Thank you. Yay! Okay, so should we start with the panel question or our audience question?
Audience question.
Sounds good. Okay, so which audience group would like to give their first question? Thank you, Akam.
Actually, thank you for your presentations. I was wondering, I come from Palestine and we have a government that, let me say, that has other issues to care about. And I have been working in Palestine for 6 years at university. For 6 years, I spent a lot of time trying to do something and to make our children and our adult people to care more about development and about education. But I found nobody caring. Like, people were just, I don't know, like, they were not that responsible and accountable. So my question is, how can we make the government support us if the government give us its shoulder, you know, a cold shoulder? How can we make this government listen to us as teachers and help us to reach our goals? This is my question regarding to Zylos, government in Zylos. So how can we break these things and make them help us? This is my question. Yeah.
Well, actually, we have somebody who works for the government. I work for the international organization, but I'm happy to give that a shot. I think I chatted about this yesterday a little bit, but there is a point, I had a discussion before, like if all of our recommendations that I talked about yesterday were the government should do this, the government should do this, and what if the government says, I don't care, and then what do we do? And so there are some ways to try to hold the government to account without the government, you know, when the government gives you the cold shoulder, what can you do? I think from a teacher's perspective, the power of partnership, so the power of getting groups together, having a teacher association, teacher union, and then understanding that teacher unions may not just be local, I mean, try to connect up to the national level, but also there are similar issues. If you're having an issue with your government, you're not the only union that's having an issue with your government and not hearing the voice of teachers. I mean, trust me, we've got the 60% number where nobody pays attention to teachers. And so, try to use the international network too. So if you are not connected actively with Education International is kind of the global compilation of teacher unions, and they do a lot of advocacy work as well. So that's one avenue to go is through organizing as teachers and trying to put pressure there. I think, I'm not, rah-rah to protest, but that tends to work in some areas, although not in all areas. I think understanding that some points there are, in some countries, there are like ombudsmen and other complaint mechanisms. One thing when I was researching about ombudsmen I was really interested in seeing is that actually they tend to be more common in less democratic situations, which is just incredible to me. So if there is an ombudsman or another complaint mechanism that's independent of the government, that may be an opportunity. Also understanding that, and Palestine is a little trickier for this, but for other countries that have made an international, like that have made the commitment to a legally binding international treaty, it's not just the government that has to report, but civil society can actually create shadow reports or parallel reports that are basically going to the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child and saying, hey, here's what's happening in my country. And that way you can actually motivate not just your local community, but you can talk to the International Human Rights Council or the International Committee overlooking that treaty. For instance, as a UN member state, you can basically, citizens and community members can make direct complaints through the Convention of the Convention Against Discrimination in Education. So not all member states have ratified that convention, but all member states have to report on that convention. And so since most countries, but not mine I guess now, are members of UNESCO, odd. You have the ability to lodge individual complaints, and then that will be a reconciliation process will go where UNESCO moderators will be sitting down. It's an anonymous process where they would sit down and say, hey, we've heard this about you, and let's try to figure out a way to work with us. So there's a couple of other ways to go to the government, but I would be interested to hear anybody else's idea. Anybody else want to say something? Okay.
Thank you. We would like to ask you, for your last presentation, how do you think your platform can be used on the in developing countries?
Thank you for the very good question. That's something that we hope to do, because it's important that you know, these kind of stories are available to everyone, accessible to everyone. So we just have to work out how that will be, because not everybody has a fast internet connection or the right technology. Just to give you an example, the Ethiopian village, which is one of the story worlds that we've made, they have got access to quite new sort of mobile phones, so they're able to actually download the story world onto their mobile phones in the village. So then it's just a matter of getting the fast enough internet to run them. But I think it's a matter of time where it can be, for instance, implemented in a very rural place in Ethiopia. But getting there, I think for us, it's a big challenge, because we will have to find partners to help us. And there we would look to, for instance, NGOs like Finn Church Aid or other NGOs working with education in developing countries to perhaps partner with and to help us take this resource to developing country. Yeah.
I wanted to know for you, we talked about the fact that we found your presentation very interesting, like every presentation were interesting, so, but like, you said that every SDG should be like learned in school, like from the beginning, but how can you include them, like for example with children, like very young, or to keep them like interesting and concerned about those issues? And then like we have another question, but
that's the main focus of my work, is how to make them developmentally appropriate. So young children are naturally empathetic. They care about people, they care about animals, they care about the environment. So I think if you can harness their natural curiosity and concern and compassion for other people, that's a place to start. Find out what they care about. Listen to them. If they love elephants, incorporate endangered elephants into the classroom, and then you can teach about the causes and effects of endangerment and then what they can do. Children are born with a concern for equity and fairness. They've done studies on babies even before they can speak. They understand what equity is and fairness is. So how can they fight injustice in the classroom? So you make it very locally relevant, make it apply to their lives, and then you ask them, what do you want to change in your environment, your school, your community, and then use their ideas and take action, actually do the projects with them. Mm-hmm.
And actually, our first question is almost the same. Our question is almost the same with the first question. It's about the vertical partnership between the international or national levels and the grassroots levels. But this one is answered. But I have another one about for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Finland. You mentioned a lot about how partnership between Finland and other countries that can help other countries to achieve SDG 4. And let's try that, despite of the SDG framework, is there any partnership that can help the development in Finland?
the development in Finland.
Yeah, in other words, it's a kind of import instead of export.
Yes, that is a good question. Yeah. Yes. We would like to have that kind of partnerships where we could learn. And actually, I think we have this opportunity all the time. It's also a matter of us understanding that it is available for us to learn. But I think that always when I'm working in another country, I do learn every day. And in that sense that it happens. But it could be that we could come up with something more formal procedures or some more kind of, let's say, some more, let's say, defined way of learning, so that it would not only be maybe me learning, but that I could help then other people in Finland learn. So I thank you for that question.
I have two questions, one for LAFTA, and the question is, to which extent does LAFTA has been used in Finnish classroom to facilitate the Finnish national curriculum reform? Because I can see that LAFTA actually trying to encourage this immersive experience, which is related to the phenomenal pedagogy, and also you are trying to create some cross-curriculum topics, which is also correlated to the topic, interdisciplinary topic. This is part of the new curriculum reform in Finland in 2016. So I can see the point of LAFTA, but how to which extent does LAFTA have been used in actual Finnish classroom, and does LAFTA have some cooperations with some other online learning companies in Finland? This is my first question, and my second question is for the first aid, Finnish first aid. You say that finding a partnership is more important than finding the money. So what are the difficulties that you have met to find a partnership?
Regarding the question about the platform, it's based on the new Finnish curriculum, so our pedagogical team has been working hard to tie the topics from the documentaries together with the curriculum. So it's very strongly linked, and it's a kind of satisfies a lot of the learning objectives. And it is cross-curricular, like you said, and it has been used in many ways at schools for phenomenon-based learning, project-based learning. Our platform is going to be launched in Finland in January, because at the moment it's available in English and only partly in Finnish. So we have only pilot schools right now using it in Finland. But we had very, very positive experiences and interesting experiences too, where the kids are creating their own content, being inspired by LAFTA's content, and that's happening in many different ways. For instance, in Kuopio, there are kids, high school kids, creating virtual reality content about global issues. That has been inspired by this. So we're really looking forward to seeing where that can go, and collaborating with the schools and the students, and both teachers and students, and taking it and growing the platform. Yeah.
Thank you. You have to correct me then if I misunderstood you, but difficulties in finding partnerships. In the Eritrean context, actually, we've been very successful, I would say. We have many partners, but it has taken a lot of investment, I would say. It doesn't come easy. And it's the trust issue is there, certainly. Every country and context comes with their own history. And I think Eritrea is one of those contexts where there has been actually quite few disappointments with the partnerships. They might be, you know, Not lasting partnerships. This kind of sustainability question is one. I think what we are hearing quite often is that you know, some actors come and go, and actually if they the Eritreans want to have a partnership, it's, they mean it for a long time. And I think this is something what FCA stands for also. But then again, if I turn into partnerships, you know, at the global level, and which are also needed, I think there, you know, an actor like FCA need to be very active. They don't come easily, or, you know, they don't walk into you. But then when you are aware of different processes, like the Universal Periodic Review, which is the, you know, human rights process, which is Finland has its own recommendations made from this UPR process, and Eritrea has its own, and you can start building partnerships to implement some of these recommendations. You have the accountability questions there, because you know, governments actually accept certain recommendations, and certain they maybe don't. But when they do accept them, and they've been made by some other states, this the accountability actually is there, or you have the roots for it. And there, of course, then you begin to see which are the partners. Is it the state partners or other NGOs who are crucial there in implementing these goals, which the national government sees important? And yes, thank you.
Thank you. Why don't we have a slight change? Why don't we ask our panel to ask the audience a question so we can answer as well? So who would like to ask from the panel?
Okay, so our question was, the theme of the last couple of days was really about accountability and understanding that we're all responsible for meeting these larger global goals in education. So as a panel, we wanted to know, what's your next step? So what's the action step? What's next? Who are you going to email? Who are you going to partner with? Who are you going to take the next step, next risk with? So take a little bit, think about, where do we go from here? Where do you go from here?
Thank you. That's a very thought-provoking question. Who would like to start answering? What's next? What's your next action? Maybe you could have, like, 1 minute brainstorm with your peers. Yes. What's next? Okay, who would like to answer the panel's question? What's next? What's your next action? Who is brave enough?
I mean, I can say one.
Okay.
Well, I was hoping that after I graduate to apply to the Green School in Bali and hopefully teach there. Yeah, I've been really interested in their work and doing that and just the freedom that kids have there, and also with the global sustainable goals, it's right in their curriculum. So that's what I would like to do.
We'll go first and then second.
Don't worry.
I was really interested by all the volunteering thing, like you can do in Finland, but the fact is, as most of people here, I'm an exchange student, so I will be here just until May. So I don't think that I will be able to like really do something or build a project which I can see until the end if it's here. So I really think that my next step will be to like get involved in some association, like I already know about UNICEF and all that kind of stuff in France as well. So that's what I think I'm going to do.
Hi, first of all, thank you for all your presentations. And as an exchange student, my next step, I think here, I'm able to receive so much information about this. And in my country, we are not used to talk about this, and we don't have access to all of this information. We don't have seminars and all of this. So I think my next step when I come back is sharing all this information with people from my country, and they can know more things about it. You don't want to talk?
I feel that if we want to really dealing with or move a step forward about how to facilitate or how to implement the accountability of SDG 4, that is already being talked about by Mr. William Snipes' lecture. And you mentioned that we need to increase the transparency in policymaking. And also encourage the democracy of the management, as well as facilitate the communication between the society, school, government, and some actual forces. I think those three are the key points for us to move forward. Yeah.
We have a few more answers. Okay, then after him, we'll have here and there.
Okay, thank you. And I guess you're asking for the topic for next year's report, right? Kind of. And I think if we can build up this kind of accountability and partnerships in education, I think one of the most important thing is to enhance the competence, or as she mentioned before, the transparency, because the competences of the educational leaders at different levels is really important. If that is, they are not competent enough, all the kind of policies cannot be translated into the grassroots levels. So it is really important, as well as the teachers' competence as well, I think.
Hello. So first I would like to say a big thank you, because I am a very skeptical and ironical person, and I come from a culture where people, government people and teachers actually are very, very inapproachable. And this was an amazing experience for me to see that we can actually talk to you, that you exist, you're not just up in the clouds. So thank you. And I think that I have a more positive approach towards change, because before this seminar, I had the feeling that I have my own ideas and I'm on my own. So no, I'm not. And thank you for this. In the future, after finishing this master's degree, I would like to go back home. I was a member of an activist group. We were fighting for Romani Gypsy children in Romania who were dumped in this dumping area, in the garbage. How do you say that? Garbage, exactly, in the slum next to the big city of Cluj-Napoca. So I was in those projects, and I would like to go back home and continue my work. So, thank you.
Can I ask a question?
We're going to get some more answers for the question, and then we'll go back to you.
Yeah.
Hi. So, personally for me, I'm from Spain, also exchange student, and I would like to do many things. First of all, just having being aware of all this, this is new for me. So I would continue learning. I'm still doing my bachelor's, my degree. I'm supposed to become a student teacher, but I don't know what I will do with my life. Because what I want to do is find my passion, find the reason in education where I want to become an expert and put all my talents and also my skill, all the knowledge, and this is the knowledge. So that's one thing. Also traveling and working on that empathy that you were talking about in Lufta, and engaging in conversations back home with people, with normal people, with my friends, my family, and all that will come casually, very deeply, I think. That's.
We will have two last, and then we'll switch back.
Yeah, I think my next step will be after my graduation to maybe go to Teachers Without Borders, because I'm like super inspired now and after these 2 days, and and to just share everything I learned the past 2 days with my family and my friends when I go back. Yeah, and I am in the same situation like them. I'm going back to Germany in a few months, so I don't know if I can volunteer while I'm here in Finland, but I will try to find some organizations in Germany to like that do stuff like this and work and try to reach the goals. So that is my new goals. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We'll have one last answer from you.
It's a little bit of a question as well, sorry, because we didn't get the turn in the first round. And I think that our questions are a little bit related to your question, because we're a group of master's students of international and comparative education. And our question is, if you see a need for us in your organizations, and if yes, how and for what and why?
Okay, that was a perfect segue. Thank you. So who would like to answer?
I may start, but I'm sure that my colleagues will add. And I think, again, I think I have very good experience of student interns and also those students who have completed, who are interested in the issues. I have been lucky to recruit excellent students every time. We've had a student, one of my students was in Eritrea doing an internship. She's now back. She was recruited by FinChurch Aid, Teachers Without Borders, to work there. She did an excellent master's thesis. She interviewed those who have participated in the professional development courses provided by the Eritrea Institute of Technology in collaboration with the University of Jyväskylä. And she did an excellent master's thesis after interviewing participants there. And now she's working for FinChurch Aid. And it started with an internship that was funded by the University of Jyväskylä and by our project in collaboration. So I think this kind of good experiences, so I really emphasize also this volunteering. And I've seen these excellent volunteers in these seminars here. And many of them have found their way then to continue working in the field somehow. And we've had interns also at the ministry in the past, but I've understood that's been maybe more challenging recently because of the regulations in Finland, but Satu can respond to that. But in the past, we have had our master students doing the internships also at the ministry. And what we try to encourage is also our students to apply for internship positions in different international organizations. We've had students at the UNESCO Institute of Lifelong Learning looking at adult education and literacy programs around the world. We've had students also in the past at UNESCO. And we've had students at the International Labour Organization. We've had students working in many different organizations. My field is research. And I think one of the areas that I think I have to do and I try to do is always to encourage students to apply for. And apply for whatever internships, wherever in the world, they find that is valuable for their career. And I think something that was mentioned earlier here is the career planning. And that is something I think we could do better at universities, that we could sort of discuss and share these stories also, where people work, where they've started, and that's something we've been trying to arrange, and I hope we will do that in the future, both in Jyväskylä and in Oulu. Maybe we could do it even online, who knows, so that we could have some career stories. We can invite people to tell us, how did they start? Where did they go first? And then what then? What happened? And I think like all these organizations and universities do offer opportunities. And I think I'm fascinated by student-led and student-initiated projects. There's room for research on that also and its impact, I think.
Could you remind me which master's you are studying? Okay, perfect. Yeah, I would echo what Elena said that, yes, I mean, we are very much open. My company is a small startup, but we are very much open to students and interns, and in fact we have several interns and students working with us right now, and also we embrace diversity in our team. We're a team of 11, we're coming from 8 different nationalities, so I think we're probably at the top of the most diverse companies in Finland. And it's not that we tried set out to do it, it just happened, but yeah, so feel free to contact us. We have had people contacting us and then ending up actually working for us. So we like to hear from everyone who feels that they have something to contribute to the cause. Yeah.
Before I directly answer your question, I want to say that since this is all about partnership, if you are interested in any of these organizations or opportunities, this is your opportunity to partnership. So take advantage of this opportunity. Right after we're done here, come up and talk to us. Mm-hmm. You've got a contact in an organization if you want to know more about it. Mm-hmm. So please do take advantage of that. So as far as the United Nations and UNESCO goes, I think, well, first, for international comparative education, I, as an educator, am always excited when I have other educators in kind of my world. It's amazing when you look at international organizations how often education in international organizations is not actually ran by educationists. So it's ran by economists. And so I'm always thrilled to have people that have experience in education talking about education. So I would encourage that. Now, we talked about volunteering. The United Nations does have a UN volunteers thing. So if you haven't looked at that, those are also interesting opportunities. One of the challenges with the United Nations is interning with the United Nations isn't always well supported. Like OECD, you can intern there, they will provide a stipend there. At UNESCO, at least within all of UNESCO, we don't provide that. We try to find other ways to help. But I know that generally, you know, we have usually 2 or 3 interns on our team all the time. And it's 3 to 6 months at a time, and it rotates. And so the other thing I'd say, you know, so if you're a teacher and you're interested in global education, you know, UNESCO's got a teacher task force, UNESCO's IEP does teacher training and principal training, and if there's not, especially for internships, I mean, sometimes I get frustrated when I have people just email me their CV and say, hey, do you have a job for me? But if you come across honestly as a student, you say, you know, I'm interested in working with this, rarely will organizations say, oh, we're not interested in an intern. And so I think, you know, take advantage of the opportunity today. Look at UN volunteers as an opportunity. And then don't be afraid to, as was mentioned before, like actually just make an email, because we're interested in it. If you show passion about it, you know, people tend to be responsive.
So outside of my university, I've done work with nonprofits in education, and you can volunteer remotely. So 5 hours a week, you can do work for nonprofits. Like the Institute for Humane Education is actually looking for someone right now. I was on their board, but you can do curriculum work and then, you know, pilot in the field. That's the work that I do for UNICEF or Peace Corps, Humane Education. It doesn't have to be a paid internship, and that can lead to other opportunities because organizations know other people around the world. So I would reach out, go on Facebook, Solutionary Teachers is a group that I'm on, and all those groups are a great way to network, and people can help you find what you're looking for too.
Like a colleague was mentioning here, I would encourage you to be very active. I'm one of those who, you know, was just persistent enough to push my services to a guy called Pekka Haavisto once years ago, and finally he took me to work for him for 1 month, and then he took me for 2 months, and then I stayed for 5 years, and luckily I then left to develop also other skills than what I learned there. But be active, this is maybe my encouragement. And also this applies towards Finchurch Aid. So I think if you really want to change the world, of course you join Finchurch Aid, and it will be very competitive. So because it's many who want that, but I think we need also to challenge ourselves. So we need to develop all the time to be a better organization, to better do the work that we're supposed to do. I think we are nowhere near as FCA, and hopefully you can help in that in the time to come.
Okay. I think most of the ideas have been mentioned, but maybe just to add that there are many, many actually companies at the moment in Finland at the moment that are developing to be like bigger companies for education globally and internationally. So that's one kind of rather new avenue, I would say. Also there are international NGOs that maybe you cannot find the information so much in Finland, but if you Google it, you will find. Then there are these sites in the internet where they actually look for people to work with their organizations, and I think I've seen sometimes internships included in those development jobs pages. And then the last point is that don't give up, because the coincidence has a lot to do in this business. So you may have a lot of plans that don't work out, and then suddenly something that you couldn't expect, it will work out.
I think with that, we'll end our question and answer period. Thank you so much. What a dynamic and fruitful conversation. Thank you to our panelists, and also thank you to our audience. We're now going to show a video from Lufta. Would you like to introduce the video? Yeah, just say a few words.
Just a few words. That this is a short film that is part of the Aura Amba experience, and I briefly mentioned about Aura Amba in my presentation, I think. It's a village in northern Ethiopia. It was founded in 1972 by a group of illiterate farmers who've come together to create a better society. So they had big ideas, and they wanted to do something. They wanted to create a place where men and women are equal, where all children go to school, where the elderly are cared for, and where religion and tradition do not dictate every aspect of life. So it was quite revolutionary, and it wasn't an easy journey for them to establish their community. But now, 45 years later, it's a remarkable place of inspiration to many, not only me. If you Google it, you will find many articles written by many newspapers. And so we've created this story world, immersive story world, together with the community. And there are 10 themes within it. And this theme is about education. So I wanted to show you this short film.
ይሁን በዘጠኝ ዓመቴ አላውቀውም ህፃን ታጨው ያን ጊዜ በበቅሎ የለም ግጥግጥ የሚባል አለ ደው በሉ እና በልተው ሲመጡ ህፃን ነኝ እኔ አላውቀውም ጓደኞች እሷ ተድራ እያሉ በቃ እኔን ይቀራረበኛል እናሳለዳለሁ እኔ ደግሞ ታድር ያለውና ተቀራውኝ ምናምን ይያልኩ ጫወት ነበር አላውቅም የነበር ከዚያ በኋላ ሶስተኛ ክፍል ነኝ አላውቅም እየቀደም እያወቅኩ ወድኩኝ ስመጣ ልጁን እናሳዩ እንደገና ማፈር ጀመርኩ ተራይተን ተቀመጥን እና አንቺን እንደማስተምርሽ ላኩ ነበር ግን አቃተኝ ግድ ማለት አለብሽ ግን እኔ ልጥፋም የሚለውን ተውኩትና ማለሽ መልሰጥ ቸሞት አለብኝ ዳት ማግጣለችና ቤታችንን መያዝ ያለብን አላቸው ለቤተሰብ አራም ፍጹም አልፈልግም ራሱ ሁሉ ሲመጣ ወይም ሰዓት ሲሄድ ማለት ነው ከዚያ ይመጣ ያናግረኛል ዝግት ነው ብርጅ መሸን ባለው አስገቡ የመጨረሻ ላይ ቀረሁኝ አንድ አመት ነበር ነው ቀርቼ ዞሎ ይገባል ነበር ያልኩኝ አላሰብኩትም 3 አመት አቋረጥኩኝ ግን ፈተን ሚኒስትሪ መጣልኝ ወደ ወራን ባጭ ተማርኩ ራሱ በዛራ ምናምን ስማር መንገድ ላይ ብዙ ነገር ችግር ይገጥማል ትምህርት ቤት አመለክታለሁ አውራን ባመለክታለሁ በመምህራኖች እንዲሁም በተማሪዎች ነበረ የማልግባት ነገር ማለት ነው ያን ሁሉ እያስፋኩኝ በዶክተር ዘመራ በትምህርት ቤቱ እስካሁን እየተማርኩ አለሁት ከዚህም ተማሪ የሚረብሽ የለም መምህራኖችን በስነ ስርዓት አስተምራለሁ ነው ልዩነቱ የሆነ ችግር ቢደርስ አግኝተለው ይፈታል ተማሪ የሚያንገራግር የለም እንደ ማህበረሰቡ ነው የሚያድ ሩቅ ስለሆነ አውራምባ ብከራይ ሰላማዊ ቦታ ስለሆነ አውራምባ እዚሁ ተቀመጭ ተባልኩ እኔም ብመላለስ ራሱ አረብ አረብ ስሄድ ብዙ ነገሮችን እየሰማ ነው ማዳቅ ይሳደባሉ ምን ይላሉ ሰዓት እያደ ነው እና መንገዱ ስለማይመች አውራምባ ብቀመጥ ማንም ያገኝ የለም ስለዚህ አሁን በታካሪዎች መቀመጥ አለብኝ ይፈቀማለሁ።
So that just shows one story of many where education really does make a difference in someone's life. And as you've probably seen our banner where most of you have signed your commitment to show that education does matter to you. And also it's just kind of been the constant theme of the seminar. So now, after watching that, we would just like to turn it to you and ask you, why does education matter? Maybe think about it for a few seconds. Just maybe a few responses. Why does education matter to you and to anyone?
Because I believe that through education we are able to improve the social welfare.
It matters to me because it gives me the opportunity to study, and the fact that I'm here in Finland, I would never have receive that opportunity without education.
I think education, it just makes us open-minded, and through education we can learn other cultures and other people, and are like more open to engage with other people in other countries.
I think education is more about empowerment, empowerment of ourselves as individuals and empowerment of our future, of our society as well.
Okay, well, thank you for sharing, and make sure that you do sign our banner before you leave the seminar today.
Do we have any other answer, maybe from our panelists, who would like to share?
More thoughts?
I know there's lots of sharing this afternoon.
Okay, if not, then now for our very last closing speech, we would like to introduce our Dean, Maria Elena Lasco, and also start by asking you the question, why does education matter? And if you could give us a final speech.
Okay, first of all, I would like to thank you for the organizers for giving me the opportunity to express these closing words to this seminar. And I would like to start by saying that I'm pretty sure that I don't have the words, not with my English skills, not in this situation, to express how grateful, happy, enthusiastic, inspired, and I think lucky I am that our faculty hosts this seminar year after year, and also this year. So I think this is the one of the greatest days in our faculty that we have this seminar. I'm so grateful and thankful. There's one thing that I'm not so grateful that I think that one bird I missed was that I'm touched, and I think that there are so many, the topics we are sharing are so touching that I start crying very easily. So that is one thing I'm a little bit worried about this whole seminar. One word relating to this seminar, to our university and Finland at the moment. I think that Jaana Pehuvoima was saying something that in many Finnish schools, universities, this is not a very central topic, and I have to share that opinion. And I was very happy that it was, I think, on Tuesday or in Monday this week that this kind of, you know that we are celebrating the Finnish 100th anniversary this year, and we have this report. It's titled Civilization, Knowledge, Science, Technology, Pro-Human and Pro-Societies. And it's called Finland 100 plus, and in this very fresh Finnish kind of agenda under the theme of innovative creative universities and applied universities, there is also this being open, international, and taking global responsibility. So it's put there in the very high level global national agenda. But I have to tell you that I think it was a couple of years ago when we were writing our Vice Dean Anna-Maria and me the kind of strategy report we have to write to our rector every year where we negotiate the budget, and then we have to tell what is the vision and of our faculty, and we were writing there that we have to be strong in global, taking global responsibility in education. And when we transformed this report to the other board members in the faculty, somebody crossed it over and there were many question marks. What is that? And we are not certainly profiling in this area. And I think the people who did it, they were not evil people, but still in our faculty, even though we have this seminar, even though we have this great international
master programs, and we have many visitors, and we are active internationally. We still, even in our faculty, there is so much knowledge that we lack, and I'm the one who lacks very, very much this knowledge. But every time when I see people around the world in our faculty in this Ruusupuisto lobby sharing these ideas, it makes me so proud that this happens in Jyväskylä, in our university and in our faculty. These are the goals, and I think somebody also said this day that they think that they are too far, that they are unreachable, or there's so many challenges to reach them. And I think that when we hear every evening news, they are not so very delightful, or they might be very depressing, that the things that is happening around us. But I've learned now a very good lesson, and it relates to a thing that I'm a dean of the faculty, but I'm also a professor in early childhood education. And for years we have been having this course, Children's Social Emotional Development and Well-being in Early Childhood. And this year we have the opportunity to have this course together with Elisabeth. And what I realized, and what is also been said today, is that when I've been talking about social emotional well-being, I've mostly been talking about risks and vulnerabilities and diagnosis and all the kind of worries that we have. And when I listened to Elisabeth last year about the very many ways how we can problem solving and find solutions, I was touched. And today semester we changed the course, so it is now a solution-based course. We are not concentrating on risks and vulnerabilities, we are concentrating on the positive sides, and it's been amazing to be part of this. We started the course with wondering what are the most pressing issues facing our time, and the students were thinking how we can discuss this very difficult. If those issues are depressing us as adults, what are they doing to young children? How we can discuss these difficult issues with young children, and how these issues more generally relate to early childhood education, and how education can matter in these issues. And this is the slide that I used to have in my course, and I think that I have been concentrating on these inside-out things, the neurobiology and the temperamental issues, gender, language, cognitive, ADHD, self-regulation difficulties, language learning difficulties, and so on, which make children vulnerable and affect their social-emotional development. But this year we were thinking the potential of education in very many different aspects. And we started, I don't know how many of you know this film. Elisabeth knows, but how many others? So quite a many. But it was the first time I saw it, and as being a professor in early childhood education, I think it was so wonderful to see that they were following four little children, baby, from one from Namibia, from one from Japan, one from Mongolia, and one from California. And when you look at these babies, you see so much similarities in their development. They live in very different circumstances, but there is this same human being everywhere, and it was it made me to realize again how much common we share, and how much potential and yes, all that. And during the course, we learned and discussed about promoting creative and critical thinking, perspective taking, collaboration, peace building, enhancing global awareness. One thing that Elisabeth showed was very, very, very inspiring, this mystery Skyping method where the classroom Skypes with some other classroom without knowing where the children are, and then they start asking questions, do you live near ocean, or is your climate cold, or things like that. Then they have their books there, and they are searching the map where it could be, and when they problem solve that, you are from New Mexico, aren't you, and yes, that feeling. So it was one very kind of simple and easy, and yet you can see how much children can learn from these little things. I was very impressed of that. And many, many other issues which are, they I think that when you look at the global goals, they look far away and they look unreachable. But then when you look these little things that we can do in everyday life, when we are doing so that we are not working alone, but we are working together and sharing and being in contact with other people in different countries. So we have so many powerful methods. I'm grateful and I've learned a lot. And then I want to close this seminar by at the end some global learning questions for you, because I've also learned that local is global. So I just would like to ask you what have you learned this far from our country, and have you learned about Finnish, for example, Finnish nightmares? So you might know that the one of Finnish nightmares relates to the fact that we are Finn. And then what is very, very frightening to us when for some reason somebody somewhere doesn't like Finland. So at this moment we can of course apologize of the weather, but in one sense I think it's nice to share with you this first snow of this year. There are many other things. You might know that we love sauna, and when we are not so talkative, but even the most reserved Finn can become chatty in a sauna, so we might talk there. So if you want to discuss more with us, so invite or have a sauna session with us. Yeah. And of course we have nightmares relating to eating and drinking, and we are the most heavy coffee users in the whole world, so it is a nightmare when there is no coffee. Yeah, and there are many, many others, but I think that we all need mentors who show us a way where to go. I think Elina has been that kind of mentor in all our faculty, and Elina, through Elina, I contacted Elisabeth. I want to share Elisabeth this a different kind of social guide to Finland. So, thank you. Yeah, and lastly, I would like to ask here on the stage people who have made this seminar through this year, and I think the two most important people are our student, Katija, and Chong. I put the... So you can select whether you want chocolate or tea. So thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. And then I would like to invite here Hanna. Elisa is probably not here. Salla is not here. Panu. Salla is there. Thank you so much. So, chocolate or tea? Yes, you had your name. And if I have to answer what education matters to me, originally I was trained as a psychologist, not as an educator, but I think that when I saw these 17 global goals and watched them through, I realized that education is a key for solving all of these. So education is a key for all the, I think, all the problems that there is, and we have to start with very young children, and we have to do it together. Thank you. And hope to see you here next year.
Thank you so much for your active participation these 2 days. I think we can all leave home inspired, full of ideas, and now it's our responsibility to take the energy forward and channel it to some relevant action. I also had a bag of gifts to our panelists for the final session. We thoroughly want to thank you for sharing your stories and giving us some good advice on how to take these issues forward. So can I once more ask our panelists to come in the front? I think we have still thanked Jong and Khatija enough, so please come in front once more. Thank you very much. Let's stay in touch and see you next year.